It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. Although, starting in September, we're going to go to our football hours, 12 to 2. So, a couple of more weeks, and then we shift back an hour. Just look at it this way. You get to sleep in a little. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. 1-800-WSB-TALK. My website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. If you're there and you don't sign up for the free weekly newsletter, you're missing out. And the other place you're missing out is on Twitter. You should follow me on Twitter. My handle there is @Glink, @GLINK, simply because we push out all sorts of information on Twitter. We have a running commentary online every Sunday. It's your place to find me online when I'm not when I'm on the show. Actually, we are still tweeting, so all kinds of stuff going on. We had a story run in Yahoo Homes about really funny things that you should and shouldn't do around your house. Got some good stories on the Equifax Finance blog this week. All of that gets tweeted out on Twitter, and would love for you to join us there, @Glink, @GLINK. All right, 404-872-0750. It is 9 minutes past the hour this Sunday. I wanted to start with a piece of strategy that is something that if you don't have, if you don't know how to negotiate for real estate or in your life, you are going to miss out on the deal that you want. You are not going to get the deal that you want because negotiation is at the heart of every single thing that we do. When you negotiate for real estate, what are you really doing? You're thinking about how the other person is going to respond to you. Or you should be thinking about it, right? You should have in your head a strategy that says, all right, I've identified this thing that I want. This is what I'm willing to trade off for this thing that I want. And you have to think in your head about every move that you make and plan it out. Because when you're negotiating for property or anything else that you want in your life, a job, a raise, you know, negotiating with your in-laws to watch the kids over the weekend so you can have a date night. I mean, whatever it is. When you're negotiating, you have to understand in your head what you're saying to the other person so that when they come back to you, you already know what the possible outcomes of that are going to be. So I was in a negotiation not too long ago to sell a piece of a business that I had started, and I sat down with the person that I started this with, and before I even got into the room, I already knew what the four possible outcomes of the conversation were going to be, right? I already knew. It was either going to be A, B, C, or D, and I had to think, before I even stepped in the room, I had to think about what my response to A, B, C, or D would be. I even went as far as to script it out. I wrote it down because I wanted to really understand how the negotiation could proceed, and I wanted to be completely ready with a response to any of the four possible outcomes. Sure enough, all four came up. And sure enough, I was completely ready with a response. And the negotiation stretched out for over a month, and I ended up in an amazing place. I ended up with exactly what I wanted because I ultimately had the stronger hand of cards because I was ready. I was prepared, and I felt incredibly, incredibly strong about it. Negotiation is as much about internal strength as it is strategy. You have to feel confident. When you go in and you're negotiating for a house or anything else, right, you have to know what's in your hand of cards. So you're buying a house, and it's not just a piece of property, right? This is, you have to know if it needs a ton of work. You have to understand if it's priced right for the neighborhood or too high for the neighborhood or it's the most amazing deal ever that nobody somehow has discovered. You have to understand what is in your hand, your cards. And then you have to understand how to construct an offer that's going to elicit the response that you want from the seller. Right? So think about it in terms of getting a job, right? You've got a job, now you're negotiating salary benefits. And you go in and you want, obviously, more money, but they may not want to give you more money. So you have to think about what else you can get in order to negotiate the best possible package for yourself, right? Right? Same is true for houses and negotiation there. One of the things that people forget is that it's not always about money. Everybody always thinks it comes down to money, and I guess some ways it does, but with a house, it's so much a part of emotion, right? You have to understand the emotional ties somebody has or doesn't have to a property. I have a friend named Steve who's selling his dad's property. His parents have died, and he's now got this house to sell, and he's finally got an offer in. And they, you know, here he is. He's tooling around this empty house, and he's sweeping the cobwebs. He's getting stuff done. He just wants to unload this puppy. He is not interested, really. He's interested in money. He wants money because he has to share it with his siblings, and it's part of the estate. But an extra $5,000 or $10,000 is not going to matter to him. If you're the buyer making the offer on that property, you have to understand what Steve's motivations are. Steve wants a clean deal. Steve doesn't want you coming back with an estate property going, you know, septic system, a year ago, you told me it worked, it doesn't work, blah, 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 fix it. He just doesn't want it. He's had his years of being in that house as a guest. He never lived in that house. He didn't take care of that house. That was his dad's house. As a buyer, you have to understand what's driving Steve's motivations and what he's going to do with your offer. So the buyers came in with like a ridiculous offer. It's 25% below list. And Steve's response was to go back to the agent and say, when they're serious, give me a call. Within a day, the offer went up 10%. So now they had come in about 10% below list, right? Steve's interest, it's not that it wasn't about money. It's always, I guess, at some place about money, but it's about intention. It's about understanding. He wanted to know where they were going, if they were serious, because he wasn't going to waste his time with people who weren't serious. What kind of a negotiator are you? Are you serious? Are you tough? Are you tough but fair? That's where you want to be. That is the sweet spot. Tough but fair. And I can hear you thinking in your head, I mean, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, I can't do this. I'm scared. I'm nervous. What if I say the wrong thing? What if I don't do it well? And what I have to say to you is when it comes to negotiation, like anything in life, you have to imagine the worst possible outcome. That's where the fear lives. It's all the way deep down, dark into your soul, and you have to imagine what's the worst thing that can happen. So for you making an offer on a house, what's the worst thing that can happen? It's what happened with Steve. He went back and said, I'm not responding to this. Let me know when they're serious. The worst thing that can happen to you is that you end up losing the house. That's it. That is not such a horrible, terrible outcome. Not at all. So if that's the worst case scenario, now you have to reverse engineer it and think about what the best case scenario is. And with Steve, the best case scenario is, okay, you've now given me a reasonable offer. Let's deal. Tough but fair. You got to know what's in your hand. You got to know what cards you can play. You have to know what matters to the seller. Is it timing? Do they need more time to find a place to live? Does it matter that they want to keep their appliances? Who cares? Stores sell appliances. That's what stores do. Just go buy some new appliances. Maybe he forgot to exclude a light fixture that was his mother's. He really wants to take it with him. That becomes a negotiation point. What are the cards that you can play? And how is that going to get you exactly where you want to be? And I'm here to tell you that if you can't negotiate in your life, you are not going to get what you want or what you need. 404-872-0750, 17 minutes past the hour. Let's go to the phones, see what's going on with everybody. Wendy joins us on the line from Marietta. Hi, Wendy.
Good morning. First, I have to tell you, you have a wonderful speaking voice. It's a joy. I listen to you every Sunday morning.
Oh, you are so nice.
You are
Thank
great.
You.
I have a few CDs. Two are coming in to fruition September 1st. One is for $10,000, a little over, and one for $5,000, a little bit over. I've talked to my financial advisor, with Edward Jones, and he suggests that I put them into Roth IRA.
Interesting. Why would he, you know, trading a CD for a Roth IRA is not, it's not an equal trade.
Right.
So what he's doing is saying, take these out and put them into your, put them into a holding tank. And then what is he suggesting that you do with them once they're in the Roth IRA?
I'll just leave them there. I'm 57. My husband is 65.
Okay.
So I have a few working years left. He's collecting Social Security.
Okay. So what do we, let's back it out a little bit to the 30,000 foot level and say, what is it that you're really trying to do here? What is the real question? How does this fit into the bigger picture of your financial life? Because I don't quite have a sense of it.
I don't need it right now. I'm looking for maybe growth income.
Okay. So CDs at 1 or 2% are not what I would call growth income.
No, no.
you're not even keeping pace with inflation. So, okay. So now what are we doing here?
You tell me. Should I dabble in stocks a little bit with his advice? Should I put it under my mattress because I'll probably get the same interest as the CDs?
Listen, you know, the problem with stuffing your mattress with cash is that if there's a fire, you're really out of luck, right? You are SOL.
Mm-hmm.
So, my sense of this is that, and you have a financial advisor, and I sense that maybe you guys aren't having the right kind of conversation.
I don't disagree with you.
And I want to know why you're not having the right kind of conversation with this person. Because you've called me, so clearly you want to backstop the advice. But it's such a teeny little question, right? This, what do I do with this? But just knowing that you think he's telling you to take these CDs and move them to a Roth IRA implies a larger strategy that I don't think you understand what he's getting at. And I'd like to just point out, he may have no idea either. So what the conversation I think you need to have is, what's the big picture here? I understand that I can put away $10,000 in a Roth IRA. I'm over the age of 50. I can put that away this year. I understand you want me to protect this money. But then you say to me, I'm looking for growth income. This is not a growth income question. Like, you can, what I'm hearing you say is, he wants me to do this, and I don't really understand why.
He's protecting for the long range. He wants me to have money so I don't have to depend on anybody else way down the line.
Right, but whether the CD's in a Roth or it's not in a Roth isn't going to change much.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it changes tax status. I mean, it goes to after-tax money, right? So then it grows tax-free forever. But honestly, it's growing at 1% a year. You don't have to worry that much about what it's growing, right?
Right.
So the questions I want you to go back and say, let's have a larger discussion about this. Because when I hear you say he wants me to have my own money and he wants me to be protected, and I hear that your husband is 8 years older than you and already in a different place in his life, there are really big questions that are sitting out here that I don't think you've dug into yet. And I would be happy to dig in with you if you want to hang on through this commercial break, because we do have to take one, all right?
Of course.
All right. Stand by, Wendy. It is 21 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Follow me on Twitter at Glink, at GLINK. We are on the phone with Wendy, who has some really interesting things going on, I think, in her life. She is 57. Her husband is 65. She's got some working time left. He's doing retirement and Social Security. And she talked to her financial advisor about moving some CDs. But Wendy, here's what I want you to go back and ask him. I want you to sit down with him and say, look, what I need to understand is the big picture. I need to understand what you're worried about, what you're scared about when you tell me I need my own money. And what are some of the possible ramifications for this? Because you called me and you said, I need, you know, I'm looking for growth income. And then you asked questions about CDs and moving to Roth IRA. I understand moving money out of just sort of general tax strategy into a Roth IRA, right? But CDs are not the vehicle that I would even be that concerned about because there's no interest that's happening with them right now. So what I want you to do is go back and say, let's have a larger conversation. I want to understand what the strategy is from now to 65 or whenever it is you are intending to take Social Security and quit working. And I want to understand what's going to happen from 65 to 85, which is about your life expectancy as a married woman these days. And understanding what's going to happen over those 28 years is going to inform so many decisions that you and your husband and your financial advisor probably even haven't talked about yet. But I want you to have those conversations because your question isn't really about moving a CD. Your question is about how am I going to fund the rest of my life? And CDs at 1% simply aren't going to do it. So go with the conversation. Call me back. Let me know what's going on. It's 28 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. I'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
37 minutes past the hour. Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show. 404-872-0750. Online all the time. Thinkglink.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. We're tweeting out. I want to know about your best negotiation scenarios. You know, let's hear about them. At Glink. At G-L-I-N-K. All right. Let's go back to the phones. Ray joins us on the line from Marietta. Hey, Ray, what's your question?
Elise, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thank you. What can I help you with?
Outstanding. Quick question about taxes. It may be a little bit goofy, but I hope you can help me out. I'm 63, pretty much retired. Got a couple of conventional IRA accounts and a 401k account with that. I was wondering, would it be advisable or statistically advisable to take some money out of my existing pre-tax accounts, take the penalty hit, and go ahead and reinvest it into a Roth so at a later date I could get this money tax-free? And I was wondering what the difference in the, is it a zero-sum thing, or would it be an advantage to go ahead and move some money into a Roth?
Well, let's back it out a little bit, Ray, and talk. I need to understand a little bit more. Are you still working?
I'm doing a little bit of work on the side, a little contract work, but as far as a 40-hour-a-week W-2 job, no.
Okay, and are you making enough money to live on? What are you living on right now?
We've got, we're both, me and my wife are on Social Security, and she has a pension from her previous job in education.
Okay. So the idea from, it sounds like you're fine just between Social Security and pension money, right, for living expenses?
We can pay our bills from month to month and have just a touch left over, yes.
Okay. So, and you're not really using then your 401k money?
Exactly. The first year I was retired, I did pull out about, maybe $8,000, $9,000 to pay off a car.
Mm-hmm.
But since then I haven't touched it. And we probably won't touch it this year.
Okay, and so how's that 401k money doing?
Let's see. One account, so far this year I've made about 7 to 8% on two accounts, and on the third account about maybe 5%.
Okay, well, you're doing better than most of the world. So the real question you have to answer, Ray, is are you a good enough investor to take the money out, take the tax hit, reinvest it, and do 7 to 5 to 10%, which is what you're getting on these accounts right now.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a good enough investor to do that?
I have been able in the past to look at the market, not daily, but, you know, look and find a trend and go into that trend. And, yeah, I've done okay.
Okay, then why are you calling me? Because the answer is, if you can do better, then take the money out now where it's run up, right? Because the stock market's near an all-time high.
Right.
Take the money out, pay the taxes on it, or better yet, I mean, you could just roll it all from the 401k into an IRA, which is what you'd have to do first. So you have to roll it into a regular IRA, and then from the IRA, you can roll it into a Roth.
Okay, I have two IRAs in existence right now I could do that with.
Fine, then you don't even have to touch that. But you still have to take a tax hit, and you will have to pay it, and it could be fine. But if you're a lousy investor, or you're not a disciplined investor, or you don't really like this, and you're just trying to find another way out, it probably isn't going to matter much.
Okay, so statistically down the road, if I pay taxes now and don't pay them later, it's not going to make really much difference tax-wise?
Well, you're paying now this year when taxes are lower. Next year they're going to go up a little.
Gotcha.
So if you move $100,000 out and it boosts your income, your retirement income, up $100,000, what tax bracket is that going to put you in?
So I understand.
You're going to pay this year 35%. Next year there might be 39%. I don't know what it's going to be. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to pay more if you wait. You might want to do 50 and 50. I mean, you're going to have to think this through so that you're not overpaying in taxes. I think what you need to do is have a conversation with your tax preparer to run through the various scenarios. It's kind of like where I started the show. You don't want to make a move like this without understanding what ripple effect you're going to have and what the different possible outcomes are going to be so that you can make the strategic best choice for you. So it's never just a zero-sum game. I you know, you asked that question and I kind of laughed because it's really not about an either-or thing. It's really about, just like with Wendy, how do these decisions impact all the rest of what you're doing in your financial life? How does this one move ripple down and change taxes that you pay now and in the future, investments that you make now and in the future, income that you need to live on or don't need to live on now and in the future? And there are some, you know, how long do you have to leave it in the Roth IRA, and what is it that you'll be able to take out going forward? So those are the questions that you need to be asking. This is the first question. Now you've got a whole other slew of questions that I want you to ask and answer. 404-872-0750. Stephanie joins us on the line from Atlanta. So, Stephanie, what happened with your lease purchase?
It turned bad, Elise. The lessee was not honest in her application, but was not found out until after she'd moved in. So I did confront her and...
What do you mean she wasn't honest? You're the owner of the property, and you got somebody to... She wanted to do a lease purchase?
Yes, lease with option to buy, correct.
Okay, and what wasn't she honest about?
She wasn't honest about her family situation. I'll kind of leave it at that.
I don't understand what you mean by that.
Her child was involved in some delinquent behavior where the police has been involved, allegedly selling drugs out of the home. Just none of that was conveyed that she, you know, that this was happening. I found out after she'd moved in. So once I confronted her with it, we decided we have two options here. Either she'll buy it right now or she'll move out.
Okay.
And so with that being said, I just want to make sure I understand, you know, what happens with both of those options.
You need a lawyer, Stephanie. Do you have one?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what does your lawyer tell you?
Well, he says that if indeed she is going to purchase now, then that's great. There's already been a price already identified for this year.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we have to go through the whole closing process. If she can apply for a mortgage or get a family member to apply for the mortgage, just go through all the steps involved in the closing.
And is she doing that?
She's going to decide which way she wants to go. If she wants to move on buying it, or if she's going to decide to move out, she's going to let me know today. I just want to be prepared, whatever decision she makes, what my next steps are going to be.
Okay, so let's say she says, I'm going to buy this house.
Uh-huh.
Do you have any sense that she can afford it? Because usually people who do lease with options can't afford to get a mortgage, and they can't afford to buy the house.
Right. She has a very wealthy sister who is going to probably come to her aid. Of course, she wanted to try to build her credit on her own. She was just had a foreclosure. So her sister is probably going to come to her aid. So if indeed the sister is able to get the mortgage and maybe put her on the deed, what does the closing entail for me? I have to get a closing attorney. Is that right?
You need a closing attorney, but you need a real estate attorney to make sure the documents are prepared correctly and to push this along. So you need to go hire your own real estate attorney. It's different from a closing attorney. You need to hire somebody who represents you, is going to work with you on the paperwork, make sure you're protected by the paperwork, and pushes this deal along. You can't do it on your own. Don't even try to do it on your own.
Okay.
This is too big a deal. And whether she buys it, she has to buy it in the next 60 days. Right?
Okay. Right,
or she has to move out in the next 30 days. You need to have some time pressure built in here.
Oh, yeah, that was it.
If her child is selling drugs in the house, it's entirely possible that your house could be taken from you by federal officials. They could take your house. There are laws on the books that say if there is a rental property and the landlord knows that there are illegal activities going on, they can come and take your house. So you want them out or owning. Those are two really good options, but you want it really fast.
Exactly.
So if the sister is so wealthy, you just have her step right in and buy that house. Like, do
That's
it
exactly
fast. And you need an attorney to make that happen fast and make sure that all that liability falls on them and not on you.
Great. Thank you very much.
So I want to know that you've got that covered. That's the big issue. And I don't care which way this goes, but whoever's advising you is correct. It's they buy it now or get out now.
Yeah.
And in the future, and it's very hard to know this, I don't know if you did a simple Google search on the name of this person and all the other people living in the house, but in the future, if you ever are in a place where you are going to be the landlord, one of the things that we, Sam and I, do on every single tenant is we run them through a Google search. And we even pay sometimes to have a background search. You have to know, as the landlord, who is living in your place as best as you can. And it's not to say that they couldn't be completely clean, and a week after moving in, there's trouble. But in your leases, you have to have something that gives you the right to swoop in and get them out, because the financial penalties could be severe for you. And so if you find out that somebody's doing drugs, that should be immediate right in the contract to cancel the lease and get them out in 30 days. And they have to agree to that up front. Illegal behavior in a rental property, never allowed. And I don't know if your lease said that.
No, it didn't.
Well, guess what? Every single one from now on will say that. Because you can't risk it. It's too much liability. And you don't want any part of that. And I think when you are interviewing, you know, tenants in the future, this is going to come up. Because we all get informed by all the things that have happened to us in our life. This has now happened to you, and I can hear it is causing huge amounts of stress. Huge.
Yes.
I mean, are you sleeping at night?
Yeah.
Good.
Barely.
Because I wouldn't be.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be sleeping. I'd be up going, oh, my God, what the heck is that kid doing now? I would be all over Google News trying to find out what's going on with that court case.
Well, actually, what I did say once I found out was that the child, and I can't really enforce this, but the child cannot be on the premises until we figure out what we're going to do. And until something is solidified, the child cannot be on the property. So she's agreed with that. She understands. I guess what you confront someone like that, they're going to come clean. So anyway, that's where I am right now. So I'm sleeping better since I've had this discussion with her. I have a you know, plan of action, but it's definitely not a good feeling. I definitely want to alert other landlords that this is a problem and that they should really, really weed out undesirable tenants.
It's so true. So you have to go find a real estate attorney who's going to help you and negotiate with this person and her wealthy sister, who will also have an attorney, and you have to push to get this deal done. And you should push to get it done. They're either buying the house and closing in 60 days, or they are moving out in 30 days. Those are the two options, and you have to be really firm about that. And you have to be strong, and you have to get in their face and say, this is how it's going to be, because I own this place right now. And I don't mean to be mean. I'm not trying to be mean, but I have to protect what's mine. And you have violated the trust that we had. And this is how it's going down. So step up or step out. It's 51 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. I'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. 404-872-0750 is our number. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Sue joins us on the line. Hey, Sue, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, welcome to the Elise Glink Show. How can I help you?
Oh, thank you. This is pertaining to your question, your topic of negotiations.
Sure.
If you were wanting to purchase a brand new home paying cash, could you negotiate that price with the builder and you would pick out your options? Is that a negotiable?
Everything's negotiable in real estate, even when they tell you it isn't. And developers are so desperate right now that it is ripe for the picking. But I will tell you that what they'd rather not do is, let's say the house is priced at $250. They'd rather not lower that to $225, because that messes up everybody else. But what they might very well be willing to do is say, listen, you pay $250, but we're going to give you $50,000 of options and upgrades for $10,000.
Okay.
There are so many ways to negotiate the price with a developer that you can't even believe it. And options and upgrades where you have to pay cash up front, all of that is a big way to go. And you can negotiate paying that at the end instead of negotiate paying that at the beginning. You can negotiate to pay some and, you know, more later. So many ways to negotiate.
But when they say, no, this is not negotiable, you still counter that?
Absolutely. Because you say to them, how badly do you want me to buy this house?
Okay.
You have to, so again, remember what I said at the beginning of the show. You have to imagine all the possible things that somebody's going to say to you, right? So you say to them, I only want to pay X, and they're going to say yes, they're going to say no, and they're going to say, well, maybe. Those are pretty much the three possible outcomes that I can imagine. So they say no. You have to know what you're going to come back with, which is, well, okay, fine, I'll pay what you want. Or two, really, seems to me that you're in kind of a desperate situation. It would be really good for you to make this sale. What are you willing to do? Always put the ball back in their court. Let him come to the table for you. Because unless I'm really mistaken, there isn't a line of buyers out the door right now for new construction development in Atlanta. So if you're there, they've got a live buyer with cash. That is exactly where they want to be. And that's where they want you to be. So you have to say to him, well, what are you willing to do for me today? And you have to be willing to walk away. And what I want to tell you, Susan, is it's okay to walk away. Because if you walk away from a bad deal or walk away from a deal that you don't want, you have actually won. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that when we come back. I'm Elise Kling, 404-872-0750 on News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back. 7 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Blink. Thanks for listening today. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We have a prize pack we'll give away, I think, in a little while. In the meantime, if you're not following me on Twitter, you should be, because you're missing half the conversation. We were talking about negotiation last hour, and James, who's an exclusive buyer agent, tweeted that his best negotiation was when the seller came across the closing table for me after for getting that last dime of allowance for repairs. So I've asked online on Twitter for you to tweet me your favorite negotiation scenarios and would love to hear back. So to do that, you've got to follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Don't forget to sign up for our free weekly newsletter as well, because it takes everything that's in the ThinkLink community, from the Equifax Finance blog to Yahoo to MoneyWatch, all the places that we play online, and it puts it all into one newsletter once a week. Usually comes out Mondays, Tuesdays. I don't know. We mix up the days sometimes, but it's in one place, and so you get access to those 20 or 30 pieces of content, and you don't have to search the web for it. We're trying to make it easy for you. So go to thinklink.com, my website, and sign up for the free weekly newsletter, and you'll be in the know with ThinkLink. We'd love for you to do that. All right, our number, 404-872-0750. We are taking your calls right now, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We've been talking about negotiation and refinancing and money and power and strategy and all those good kinds of stuff. So let's go back to the phones. Karen joins us on the line from Jefferson. Hi, Karen.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about the sale of my mom's house.
Mm-hmm.
She has been in an assisted living facility for a couple of years now, beginning stages of Alzheimer's, and I'm for POA. And unfortunately, she refinanced her house probably 3 years ago before I knew I should have stepped in with her finances. And she is upside down in her mortgage.
Okay. What did she do with the money she got?
Oh, I think she just was in a position where she thought it was okay to just spend it and run up her credit cards, and she was forgetting to pay her bills, and we found like $30,000 worth of credit card debt. So just a lot of it got gone.
Yeah. It's really sad when that happens, and it's great that you're the power of attorney, but it also means you're on the front line of dealing with the emotion of that kind of situation as well as all of the financial responsibilities.
Yes, it is.
It's
and
a lot.
It's very emotional, very painful at different times, you know, seeing all this happen to her. My question is, we probably need to put in about $25,000 to $30,000 just to get the house up to par for sale, a new roof, carpet paint, et cetera. No updating or anything like that, just getting it ready. She probably owes $270,000, and we would probably have to come to the table with $50,000 if we could sell it.
Well,
just even for that.
Does she? So the only reason you would come to the table with money, I mean, why would you think about doing that? Why not just do a short sale?
Well, that's, I guess, good question. Thank you for reminding me of that. She has some stock, and I don't know whether the financial institute, the bank, would they, I'm assuming we would have to give them a financial statement showing her assets.
Yes, you will.
So would they come after her assets for that if we short sold it and they sold it for or negotiated on a really low amount, or would we come out better going to the table with what we can get for it?
I think I would go. What you want to do, since your mom's in assisted living and she's declining, and it's not going to turn around for her, right?
I mean, no, it's not.
She's got Alzheimer's, and the sad, sad truth of that horrible disease is that it only gets worse.
Yes.
So she's going to need every penny of those assets. And when they're depleted, she's going to go on Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bank knows this. They may try to fight you for it, but if those assets are locked, are they locked away in like a 401k or other qualified retirement account?
They are in stock from the company she used to work for.
Right, but is that part of an IRA, that stock, or is it just sitting out there, out not in a taxable account?
No, it's not. It is just sitting out there.
Okay, so they may try to get that, and you should try to fight back. And you should get a real estate attorney who can take a look at the loan, and the loan probably says that you could just, you don't even have to do a short sale. You could just turn this house back over to them. You could do a strategic default.
Okay.
So you want to explore all of your options. One option is you make the company, the bank, whole. Option number two is you do a strategic default. Option number three is you do a short sale. You don't care about her credit. She no longer will need credit in her life.
No.
Right?
No, she does not, that's for sure.
And what you don't want to do is you don't want to get into a situation where the bank looks at you and says, oh, well, you've got the money,
mm-hmm.
you and your husband, because that's your money. So you have to look at what she has and how you're going to protect it for what you really need it for.
Okay.
Which is her assisted living.
Yes, and that's the main thing we want to protect, because as she progresses and moves up to the next facility level, it, of course, increases tremendously. And she worked hard for this money, and we're just trying to protect her. And
right. Well, you're going to spend it. This is not about, you know, your inheritance.
Like, oh,
won't be an inheritance here,
no.
Unless she's got... This is all about, you know, just spending it. So I'm sure that the longer you can avoid, you know, putting her into Medicaid, the better it is for her.
Right.
So I think you want to talk to a real estate attorney to look at all the paperwork and the documents, start the conversation with the lender, and say to them, you know, lender, you have a choice, right? Because this is a negotiation. We've been talking about negotiation during the whole show. This is a negotiation, right?
Yes.
Here are the options on the table. Strategic default, short sale, foreclosure. What do you like here? How do you want to handle this? Because this simply isn't going to go away. She's no longer in the property. We need to unload this property. And there, you have to understand what their responses are going to be and how they're going to make you go through it. And then you are going to have to make some decisions as the POA about what you're willing to do. And I want those decisions to be informed, and I want you to feel strong about it. Because when you have this kind of an incredibly emotional situation with your mother, it drags on your ability to make smart, objective decisions. Because it's your mom. And you love her, and she's so sick.
Yes.
And
right.
I don't even know if you have siblings, because that can complicate every single picture.
I do have siblings, but we are all on the same page. It has been a wonderful relationship of doing whatever it took to take care of our mom and
make sure
this money goes to taking care of her. And I just hate to know that, you know, the bank did come in there, I think, when she was very susceptible, and them knowing that she probably wasn't making the correct decisions. And she was very stoic and wouldn't let us help. And I tried not to take away her independence before I had to. And I think they took advantage of that. But
you shouldn't feel, listen, you, Karen, you shouldn't feel bad that you didn't step in sooner. Parents are, they guard their independence. They don't want to be children again, right? That's really what happens, right? You raise
yes,
your children and then you become their children.
Yes.
And they don't want that. And you don't want to do it as a child. And it's so hard when you literally have to step in. And let me tell you, I've heard from thousands of people in your situation over the years. Everybody feels they stepped in too late. Everybody has a moment where it's like, if I had just done this 2 months, 1 week, a day earlier,
well,
I would have been able to make it better. So I understand where you are, but do not own that feeling, because there's just so much more to do now, and just focus on the future. So you need to get yourself set and understand exactly what your mom's gotten herself into and what the options are going to be for this house, and then you're going to need to call the bank, or your lawyer is going to have to call the bank. And let me tell you something, having the lawyer call the bank may speed up the process and make it better for you.
Okay.
So I want you to find somebody who really understands this stuff and does it every day.
Okay.
Because you want to get out of it, and get out of it clean, and get out of it fast. So you can focus on what's really important. Good. Do you know how? Do you have a good real estate attorney? You know how to find one?
She lives down in Tucker, and I'm up near the Athens area. I'd rather have somebody maybe more local towards her, and I'll just sort of have to look around maybe.
Not necessary. The lender is probably a national lender.
He is. They
so
are.
So it doesn't really matter. They're going to be in downtown Atlanta. They're not going to be in Tucker. So what you're going to do, and the way that it works is that in every city, there's like three people per lender who handle all the foreclosures and short sales and strategic defaults.
Okay.
For the big lenders. So what you want to do is you want to call either the Georgia Bar Association or the Atlanta Bar Association.
Okay.
Get to the head of the real estate committee. Tell them what you're looking for. Ask for a referral. There will be attorneys, like my husband Sam in Chicago. He knows the three people at, say, Bank of America who handle this stuff. He works with them on all their deals. That's who you want. You want the person who does this day in and day out, who knows the people who are the ones in charge.
Okay. That's a great place to start. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome, because if you end up with the wrong person or you end up with somebody who's never done this before, it's so unhelpful. And you're going to have to pay this person anyway to do this.
Right.
So you want to try and either do it on a fixed fee, or if you're doing it hourly, a few $100 an hour, you want somebody who really is going to do it fast because you don't want to pay $10,000.
Right.
So, but I need you to get somebody. This is not, you know me. If I think you could do it on your own, I tell you. But this is something I don't think you can do on your own. And I don't want you to do it on your own because it's so complicated and there's so much there that to protect that you just don't want to make a mistake. The liability is too high.
I think it is, too, and I appreciate these things that I can look up tomorrow and just get started on this, because we've already started on, you know, painting and things. I didn't just need to put a halt to all that, and now that I hear that, I may have some resources and some other options.
Yeah. I mean, I would stop the work. I would stop paying for the work, and I would pay the attorney and try and figure out if you even need to do any of that stuff.
Okay.
All right.
Well, you've been so helpful and very kind. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome, Karen. Good luck, and really all the best to you, your siblings, and your mom, because what you're going through now, getting this organized, it's such a gift that you're able to give to your mom and to your siblings, by the way. And I'm glad they've been supportive and helpful. That doesn't always happen either, trust me. But that you can be on this page and you can help her in her time of need is such a gift. And I wish you the strength to carry it through all the way. It's 19 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Kling Show. Our number 404-872-0750. We'll take more of your calls coming up next on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
24 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elyse Kling. Thanks for joining us. Hey, let's go to the phones. George joins us on the line from Snellville. Hey, George.
Hi.
Hey, so what's on your mind today?
I've heard you speak in the past about refinancing.
Mm-hmm.
And we closed our house 2 years ago this past May, so I guess we've been in it about 2.5 years. We got a 4.25% 15-year fixed rate.
Two and a half years ago?
Yes.
You probably thought that was the best rate of your life.
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
Okay, so now it's a point lower, 3.25% or even less. What do you think
about
it?
Or even less.
Or even less?
Well, I've been talking to someone about refinancing, and they have presented me with a lower interest rate, closer to about 3.1, and a shorter term, about 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and it's a fixed rate, but it makes my payment go up.
Right. So my four rules for a home run refinance, which I'm sure you've heard me say ad nauseum, is number one,
yes.
lower the interest rate.
Yes.
Number two, lower the payment. Number three, shorten the loan term. And number four is manage the closing costs so you can pay it all off in a year or less. So when you have a situation where you're shortening the term, so realize you're only shortening the term 3 years here, right? Because you've been in the house 2.5 years?
Yes.
So you're only going down 2.5 years. It's not
right.
much of a shortening. So you're shortening the loan term, and I don't know what they want to charge you with closing costs.
It's a few thousand dollars. I don't think it's over $5,000.
So here's the problem with shortening beyond 30 to 15 years is a no-brainer. 30 to 10 years, 25 to 10 years, all that is a no-brainer. But you're in a situation where you only have 12 and a half years left on this loan. Shortening it down to 10 years but paying $5,000, I would rather you take the $5,000 and you pay down this loan more so that every single payment you make on top of that becomes like a bigger part, a bigger chunk of the payment, and you're actually prepaying this loan. If you just added an extra maybe payment or two a year for this loan, you would pay it off in 10 years. And you'd pay a slightly higher interest rate, but the thing is you're paying so little in interest compared to a 30-year loan now, it may not make sense for you. You may not save enough money for this refi to make sense for you. And that's what I want you to think about. So go online, play around with some of the online calculators. You can go to ThinkLink and do it. You can have the lender do it. Talk to a few other lenders. You may be better off just prepaying your mortgage than refinancing. 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. Be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
36 minutes past the hour on the Elise Klink Show. Welcome back, everybody. So glad to have you with me today. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. The website, thinklink.com. I don't know if you've noticed, but we have like 8,000 pages of free information about buying and selling, fixing up and refinancing your house at ThinkLink. It's just a wealth of information. News stories go up all the time. You know, what we're trying to do, what my team and I are trying to do is to provide you with all the information, all the tools you need to make the smartest decisions of your financial life. I want you to be smart when it comes to money. It is so hard to make money. It's hard to make it. It's hard to keep it. It's hard to invest it. You worked so hard for that. I just want you to have the information you need to really do the best job making smart decisions. That's what we do on Twitter, by the way. You should follow me or you're missing half the conversation at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, because what we do there is point you to all the really great information and resources that you need to make those smart decisions. Life's tough enough, folks. Let's just make it easy when it comes to money, shall we? 404-872-0750. Stan joins us on the line from Decatur. So, Stan, it sounds like you're a real estate investor, huh?
Yes, we started about almost 40 years ago in Florida, in the panhandle of Florida, and then when the recession hit, we got stuck with too many properties, and so we...
How many is too many?
Say it again.
How many properties is too many?
At one time, I think 20, in the 20 range.
Uh-huh.
And so we have fought our way out of that, but we did have to do a short sale. I had to do one. We had divided the property up between myself and my wife, and I did a short sale coming up on 2 years ago. My wife did one a year ago. We're trying to refinance our primary home, and I'm hearing all different kinds of penalty years, from 1 year to 7 years for a short sale. Our credit scores are still high because we didn't have to miss payments on the... Or I didn't. We just had to miss one payment on my wife's short sale in order for them to accept it.
So what are your credit scores?
770 and I think 720.
Those are good enough scores. The question I have for you is, have you actually gone and talked to lenders and applied for a loan yet?
We've actually went farther than that, where lenders have promised us that they could get it done, paid for the appraisals, paid initial application fees, and then they come back and say, "Oh, sorry, we screwed up. We didn't, we didn't realize that they wouldn't accept your loan."
I see. And so, did you get your appraisal? You probably couldn't get the appraisal money back. Did you get the application money back?
No. No.
So typically with short sales, it's 2 to 3 years. Right,
okay.
That's when, but that doesn't, just because Fannie and Freddie and FHA are willing to accept you after 2 to 3 years doesn't mean that any of the other lenders are willing to do it. And the reason is that they're now having to pay back hundreds of millions of dollars to Fannie and Freddie for bad loans.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't used to have to do that. Well, first because there weren't really that many, and then Fannie and Freddie weren't about to push them. So now they are, and that's why they're not doing it. What is your primary residence loan rate at right now?
5.75.
Okay. You know, and how many years do you have left to pay on that loan?
We refinanced it 3 years ago on a 15, so we've got 12 years left.
Okay. So you could bring that down, and we talked about this earlier. You could bring that down several percentage points. Probably to, you know, 3.25, maybe 3.5, which would be nice, but it's not a deal breaker because you only have 12 years left on this loan. So you're already not really paying very much in interest. When you have a 15-year loan, you pay all your interest up front. So the amount of interest you've paid in these first 3 years, if you let it go another 2 to 3 years, basically all the interest you're going to pay on this loan is going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, you could save some money, but I don't want you to feel bad if you just don't. Because the money you've already wasted with appraisal fees and application fees is just, you know, you're already out there and lenders are telling you we don't want your business.
Right.
So you can keep looking, but I wouldn't agree to pay anything until the closing. I would just say I'm not going to pay you an application fee and I'm not going to pay an appraisal fee because I keep getting burned by lenders who say they can do this and they can't. So I'm
right.
happy to pay that at the closing, but I'm not going to pay it in advance. And I think what you will see is that there's almost nobody out there who's willing to do that loan right now for you. Now, are you talking about a jumbo loan?
It's 370. It's below the jumbo.
Below. Okay.
You can keep
looking. I assume you have equity in the property?
Over 50%.
There's going to be a lender out there eventually who will do it. I just would stop paying money up front for it because that's really annoying. I'm sure you're pretty annoyed with that by now.
Right. When it says who owns the loan and it lists three initials and the initials are KVM, how do I find out who has the loan and what, you know, institution has the loan and maybe is there any... What I've been told is that it's not a Fannie or a Freddie loan.
Okay.
And then who the institution that has the loan is KVM.
Well, if you're going out to just refinance, it doesn't really matter who has the loan.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who KVM is. But
okay.
It doesn't really matter. You're going to Bank of America or Wells Fargo or Chase or Citi or, you know, BB&T. I mean, whoever you're going to is an entirely different scenario.
Or
a mortgage broker. I would try to find a mortgage broker who deals with a whole bunch of lenders and who actually handles people who have had short sales.
Yeah. Initially they had solicited us, the people that had the loan, and said under HAMP 2 we would qualify because of our salaries and because of our credit scores and the fact that, you know, different reasons, and it has fallen apart too. You know, I guess we'll just stay the course and make
it would be nice to save some money here, and maybe in another year or so you'd be able to refinance. But your payment might go up because you're going to be starting all over again with interest. Even if you go down to a 10-year loan, your payment could go up, and it may just not work out for you. Now, you might look into a 5-1 or a 7-1 adjustable rate mortgage, which might be as low as 2.65% or 2.75% fixed for 5 to 7 years and just get the whole thing paid off if you can find somebody willing to take the paper on it. With so much equity, I can't imagine that there isn't some lender out there that's willing to do it. And if somebody wants to tweet that to me who's listening to the show and tell me who I should send you to, I'm happy to say it. But... you know, if you can, in another year, you'll probably be a lot closer to finding somebody who's willing to refinance. But there is a penalty that you are paying for this. You know, this is a penalty that you're paying. You've done two or three short sales, and unfortunately, there's a cost to that. Now, you didn't pay it with your credit scores, which is nothing short of remarkable, by the way, but you're paying it now. And so it's unfortunate. I wish it didn't have to happen. But lenders have been really badly burned. There is a big cost that's being paid by big banking as well as millions and millions of homeowners. And if it means that you have to pay an extra percent or two right now for another year, let me tell you, there are a lot of people a lot worse off. 44 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phone. Susan joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hey, Susan.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm good. What can I do for you today?
2 years ago, I refinanced my home under the Making Homes Affordable Program. Because I did require an appraisal. And also, I'm upside down, of course. My house has lost $80,000 in equity value.
That's,
in the past 3 years.
That's a huge amount of money.
Yes, it is. But I'm very upset with whatever talked. But anyhow, that's beside the point.
Susan, it's never beside the point. The anger that you feel is never beside the point, trust me.
You're right. And right now I'm at 5.5%, and I know that interests are down to about 3.25%.
Not for you.
Not for you.
So okay. You refinanced under Making Home Affordable, so
yes.
That will disqualify you, I think, for a while for HARP. And even if you were able to get HARP, you wouldn't get 3.25%. You might get 4.5%.
Okay.
So
it wouldn't be worth my while.
Well, I don't think you're going to get it because you've already refinanced once under the program.
Right.
So I don't think that lenders are doing, if you've refinanced under that program, they're not letting you do it again and again.
Okay.
So you can shop around and take a look, but it's not an unlimited sort of thing.
So I should be happy right now with my 5.5%.
Let's talk about how happy you were when you got it 2 years ago, because it probably saved you money and made you feel a whole lot better.
It did. It brought my payments way down.
And where were you originally? 7.5%, 8%?
No, I was at 6.5%.
6.5%, and it brought it down 5.5%. And how much are you saving each month?
About $200.
So the average family that goes through Making Home Affordable or a HARP program does save between $200 and $300 a month. So for you, that's $2,400 a year after tax in your pocket.
Yes.
That's not so bad.
No, it's not bad. I was just curious because I saw the low interest rates and, of course, tempted by that.
It is very tempting, and I wish I had a magic wand, because of course if it's this easy for you to make payments now, imagine how much easier it would be to save yet another $200.
Exactly.
But I don't know anybody who is allowed to do the HARP program over and over again. Now that may change next year, I don't know. But I think for the moment, and you certainly feel free to shop this advice around. Go talk to some lenders and see, but I think you're going to find that you are out of the box.
Okay.
All right?
I appreciate your help. Thank you.
You're welcome, Susan. I wish I had better news for you. 404-872-0750 is our number. Fran joins us on the line all the way from Colorado. Fran, you also have a HARP question, right?
Yes, I do. I read your column in last week's paper, and I had just done a HARP refinance 2 months ago with Chase. They told me they were the only bank out there doing a HARP. After reading your article, it said many banks are doing them.
Yes.
And
Did you go to makinghomeaffordable.gov and read about HARPs before you did one?
I did, and I checked with another lender, and their interest rate was just a smidgen lower. And I guess my main question is, did I get blindsided by Chase by saying that they were the only bank out there doing this, and they would do it without an appraisal?
Well, yes, without an appraisal is the whole point of HARP. Everybody does it without an appraisal. Fran, the real question is, if you read the website, it says that you don't have to only go to one lender. So why is it that you believed Chase when they said they were the only ones in town who could do a HARP?
Was a good mortgage broker, I guess. He was very personable, very friendly. He seemed very down to earth.
But it wasn't a mortgage broker, right, because he worked for Chase?
Yeah, it was a mortgage banker within Chase.
So his whole point is to sell you on Chase.
Yeah.
You didn't even question that.
Oh, I did, because I did check with Wells Fargo, and they were in the same ballpark, but they were requiring a lot more items, which would have boosted up the refinance cost.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas since I'm an existing mortgage holder with Chase, they kept a lot of those costs down.
So there, so you did do a little shopping around.
Yes.
You did find out that Chase isn't the only one that does HARP.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually did some homework, not nearly enough, but some.
Yes.
And you found out the answer is Chase was a better deal.
Yes, but now after reading your article, I was wondering if I could have gotten a lower rate. I was in an adjustable rate mortgage, and my rate at that time was 3%.
Uh-huh.
With the HARP, with Chase, it was 4.25%.
Okay.
Which is a permanent one, but I guess my main question is, like I said, did I get blindsided? Could I have gotten a lower HARP interest rate?
I don't know, but I doubt it. Not much lower than that.
Okay.
Because I assume you're doing HARP because you're underwater.
Not underwater, just unemployed.
Unemployed. So that's a really big problem, right? You have to, you know, being unemployed and being able to refinance to bring down, that's, I don't even know how to impress upon you. That's just such an amazing thing that you were able to do.
Okay.
I mean, never in the 20-odd years I've been writing about real estate would an unemployed person be able to refinance a mortgage. And you were able to do it, and you got 4.25%.
Yes.
And well, I know because you're unemployed that every single dollar means something.
Yeah, well, they were going by my Social Security income. That's what they were using as my income.
Right. And so this is an amazing thing for you, Fran. Could you have done a little bit better? Maybe, but HARP, you're right in the ballpark with what people are getting for HARP. They're not getting 3.25%.
Okay.
They're not.
But someone told me they got under 4%, like 3.375. And
What did they pay in closing costs? Do they have
about the same that I did.
So what else was different about them? And then the answer is, well, maybe you could have if you had taken the time to shop around, but you didn't. You didn't actually shop around, and you didn't do your homework, but maybe you could have gotten lower. But what I'm hearing is that people are getting between 4 and 4.5%. But it changes, and every lender is different. And if you're out there looking for a HARP refinance, do your homework. Call a dozen lenders. Talk to a bunch of mortgage brokers, not just a mortgage banker, and don't believe everything you hear. Because anybody who's trying to sell you something has a vested interest in making that deal close. It's a negotiation. Going all the way back to the beginning of the show, when you're trying to get a deal for yourself, you have to understand what the possible options and outcomes will be, and you have to know and be solid in your knowledge before you even walk in, or you can get taken advantage of. And I'm not saying, Fran, you did. You might have, you might not have. You'll never know, and I'll never know. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Be back in a moment on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
57 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today. It has been a great pleasure, as always, to serve you and be here today to chat about negotiation strategies, what's going on, and how you can actually get what you want, whether you're negotiating for a mortgage, you're negotiating for a home purchase, or you just want your in-laws to take the kids for a night out. Everything you do in life is a negotiation, and everything that you want to get, you have to be able to envision the possible outcomes. And I told you a story early on about how I think about every single situation, which is to imagine those outcomes and what will come back and then where I'm going to go next. Negotiation is a strategy that you need to plan out. You really need to map it out. Write it down. I always do. so that you know exactly where you need to go before you need to get there. All right, join me online, Twitter, at Glink. We'll be online all week. I am off this week running around Atlanta doing all sorts of things. So if you see me, honk your horn or wave hi, and then I'll be back on the air with you next Sunday. So don't be late, 11 a.m., 404-872-0750 will be the number to call next week. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks so much for listening to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB. Have a great week.